I just want to add one more prayer concern. I didn't mention our keyboardist, Daryl, was not with us last week at Palm Sunday because he was in with his family in North Lake Tahoe attending a memorial service for his grandson who was tragically killed in a car accident. So Daryl, just want to keep you and all of your family also in our prayers and hope that the Easter light shines on all of you very brightly. The Easter story is recorded in the Gospel of Mark. When the Sabbath was over, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, brought spices so that they might go and anoint Jesus. And very early on the first day of the week, when the sun had risen, they went to the tomb. They had been saying to one another, "Who will roll away the stone for us from the entrance to the tomb?" When they looked up, they saw that the stone, which was very large, had already been rolled back. As they entered the tomb, they saw a young man dressed in a white robe sitting on the right side, and they were alarmed. But he said to them, "Do not be alarmed. You are looking for Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified. He has been raised. He is not here. Look, there is the place they laid him. But go, tell his disciples and Peter that he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him, just as he told you." So they went out and fled from the tomb, for terror and amazement had seized them, and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. A moment of terror for any preacher, at least for this preacher, is when someone gets up at, a memorial service or a wedding or some other service to share a reflection or a story, and they begin by saying, "You know, I haven't really prepared anything, but..." And away they go. The person clearly doesn't know how to begin. And after all these years, I know it's a pretty safe bet they have no idea how to stop. Indeed, probably the most consistent critique of my own preaching over the years by my family goes something like this: "Well, Dad, you know, the sermon was okay, but why did you feel the need for three different conclusions?" Knowing how to stop, knowing when you're done, it's a great challenge for any speaker or writer. But you know, apparently it was absolutely no problem for Mark. It seems he's barely begun to tell the Easter story, and he decides he's finished. And so they went out and fled from the tomb. For trembling and astonishment had come upon them. And they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. The end. That's it? That's Easter? We got up and came to church for that? A frightened silence, a running away in fear? What a weird way to end a gospel. What happened to all the hallelujahs, the shouts for joy? Now, it is clear that the early church was not at all fond of this ending. If you look into your Bibles, you can see other endings were added to make Mark's story sound more like the other gospel accounts. It's as if people were trying to fix what they considered to be a broken or incomplete document. But is a fix really necessary? Three women arrive at the tomb, deeply grieved. Their teacher and Lord has been executed. It's unbelievable but true. The harsh and death-dealing ways of the world have triumphed once again. Their hopes, their dreams, defeated. The reality of Jesus' death weighs on them as they worry about how they can get into the tomb to anoint his body. Who will roll away the stone? But then, things get kind of interesting. The stone is already rolled away. The tomb is open, but instead of a dead body, they find a young man in white who informs them that Jesus is not here. And Mark tells us they were alarmed. You know, I love the honesty of the gospel. No hallelujahs, no festive music and dancing. The shocking news of Jesus' resurrection is met with alarm, with fear. The women struggle to regain their composure and decide how they can respond to such unbelievable news. They are so shaken, so afraid. In the words of United Church of Christ minister Martha Spong, their fear reminds us that the good news of Christ's resurrection is not simply reliable news to be taken for granted. It is a truth so shocking that even the first people to hear it, the people who hear it on the spot where it happened, cannot imagine how to respond or how to share it with anyone else. Now, I've said on other Easters that it actually makes life a lot easier if we just don't believe all this Easter talk. It is much easier just to say, hey, let's all go out to the cemetery and give poor dead Jesus a decent burial. After all, it's the least we can do. We had trouble following him closely when he was alive, but now that he's dead, well, it's a lot easier to be his disciple. You know, we can never quite keep up with Jesus, never knew what he was up to, where he was headed next, what kind of trouble he might be stirring up, what he might ask us to do next. Ah, but now we know where he is, sealed shut, safe, out of the way, behind a big stone. So much easier not to believe. Then there's no claim on our lives. No call for transformation. No talk about loving enemies, going the second mile, caring for the least of these. If Jesus is dead and gone, then once again, the world has been made safe for the status quo. But what if it's true? What if it's true, this talk of Easter, resurrection, new life? What if it's true? What if all the rules have changed? What if, as Craig Barnes suggests, a risen Savior is now loose in our world and he knows our names? You know, it might have been safer just to stay home in our pajamas and read the paper today. I recall the words of a young man who, after seeing the Grand Canyon for the first time, exclaimed, "Boy, you sure don't want to mess with whoever made that." You sure you want to mess with Easter? Pastor was on an airplane, returning home from a conference. He was seated next to an elderly gentleman. They struck up a conversation. Slowly, perhaps because the man learned he was talking to a minister, their conversation became more candid. He told the pastor that he and his wife were the parents of several children, one of whom, a son in his 30s, was confined to a nursing home. He'd been injured in an automobile accident several years earlier, had suffered serious brain damage, and was now pretty much in a permanent vegetative state. The man then startled the minister when he said, "We had stopped loving our son. We visited him every week. It was our duty as parents, but we stopped loving him. Love is a reciprocal relationship, giving and receiving. Our son could not give, he could not receive, and we just stopped loving him." But he wasn't quite finished. He went on. "One day we went for our regular visit and were surprised to see that he already had a visitor. We did not know or recognize this person. It turned out he was a Lutheran minister who routinely made visits there in the nursing home. We waited outside the hall, watched and listened as the minister talked to our son. I thought to myself, as if my son could appreciate a conversation. Then the minister read him a psalm, and I thought to myself, as if my son could appreciate a song. And then the minister had a prayer for him. And it suddenly occurred to me, this man knows my son's condition. But he sees my son not through clinical eyes, but through the eyes of faith. He treats my son as a precious child of God. Those women were right to be afraid. They were no fools. Standing before that empty tomb, they knew everything had changed. Don't come to Easter worship hoping for some blessing of the status quo. Thank goodness that's over. Now we can get back to our usual routines. No, resurrection has a way of penetrating deep down into life, all of life, even life in a lost and lonely room in a nursing home. It has a way of changing us and the way we see the world, the way we see each other. He treats my son, my lost, wounded, unresponsive son, my son who was dead to me. He treats my son as a precious child of God. Like it or not, believe it or not, in spite of all the evidence to the contrary, because of this day, it is a new world out there. But back to our text. The women are told Jesus has gone before them into Galilee, and it is there that they and the others will find him. Galilee, interesting. Not Jerusalem, not Rome, not some high and holy place, but Galilee, common, run-of-the-mill, impoverished, dirty, dusty, everyday Galilee. That's where Easter happens. That's where the defeat of the powers of death and darkness happens. Galilee, Sebastopol, right here. He is going before you to Galilee, heading back to where his followers lead their ordinary workaday lives. This is where they will meet Jesus. And this is where we will meet him. On Good Friday, as I was struggling to wrap up this sermon, I read of the murder of 147 mostly Christian students at a university in Kenya, murdered by radical militants based in Somalia. Slaughter, once again, perpetuated in the name of God. And this was just days after I had officiated at the memorial service for a young man, father of two little children, who had gone out into the woods and committed suicide. What could I possibly say to that grieving family? The pain and brokenness all around us, indeed within us, can make my Easter words sound far-fetched, unrealistic, naive, sometimes even to me. My God, the power of death still seems so strong. Come on, preacher. Don't give me that Easter nonsense. But what if it's true? She worked hard in high school, made good grades. Even though she had come from a difficult home situation, she worked hard because she had high goals. But when it came time for her to go to college, she had applied to a number of schools, she received far too little financial aid to go to any of them. So she went to work in a rather dull, modest job. Friends trying to be helpful told her, you know, you just have to face facts. It just doesn't look like college is a possibility for you. You have to be realistic. You have to learn to adjust to the world as it is. But you see, she was a believer. She believed in the Easter hope, in the promise of new life. She could see a different world. And so she took a deep breath, enrolled in some night classes at a community college, worked hard, made good grades, and eventually was able to attend the financial help to gain the financial help to attend a four-year school. Today, she is a renowned teacher of young children. Just as Jesus could not be held by the tomb, so she refused to be held back by the less than ideal circumstances of life. She refused to give in to the world as it is. And that's Easter. Never forget, Jesus went back to Galilee, back into our world with the message that we no longer have to resign ourselves to a world where death and the powers of death have the final word. No, dare to believe that truth and goodness, reconciliation, peace, love, and life, these are the final realities. Dare to believe that the teachings of Jesus are true and that working for their realization is holy work. Work worth living for, work worth dying for. You know, the fear of those women as they stood at the door of the empty tomb rather reminds me of the young mother who told her young son just before his very first swimming lesson, "Now don't you dare go near the water till you've learned how to swim." Pretty scary stuff. Pretty risky to let go of the familiar old and embrace the new. To dive right in, losing our lives to find them. Opening ourselves to the beauties of the world and not being afraid of what is ugly. Taking hold of today and trusting God to take hold of tomorrow. It remains one of my favorite Easter stories. Charles Blondin was one of the world's greatest tightrope walkers. In 1859, he crossed Niagara on a tightrope. After the crossing, it is reported that he asked an excited onlooker, "Do you believe I can carry a man on my shoulders across Niagara?" The man, breathless with enthusiasm, said, "Yes, he believed he could." "Then," said Blondine, "will you be the man?" The year is not 1859, and we're nowhere near first century Palestine. But a risen Christ comes to us still and asks, "Will you be the one?" Is the life-changing promise of Easter for you? "For I can raise anyone from death to life, and I can do it right now. Will you be the one?"